You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. What we want. You're listening to On the Couch. On the Couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are On the Couch. Welcome, everyone. Got a great show for you today, as usual. Hey, do you guys out there sometimes feel panicky? Yeah, of course, we all do. Have you experienced moments where you have sort of a shortness of breath? You feel generally out of control or dizzy or shaky or like you're going crazy? Because you can't control these and more physical symptoms. Are you kind of stressed out? Of course, every single person on this earth is pretty stressed out, I think. Do you sometimes feel you can't get a handle on some of your symptoms when they come up? I mean, they don't have to be all together, but occasionally we have stomach problems, we have headaches, we get achy in our bodies, all that stuff. And it's related to panic and stress. And we're talking about how to manage stress and panic symptoms today. I have a special guest here who's terrific. He's an expert. He's going to tell us about it. He's a researcher. And along with being a world-renowned interior designer, he's a leading furniture manufacturer, actor, what I would call generally a talented professional. But he's also a researcher and author of the book that we're all talking about today. And it's entitled Snap Out of It! Snap Out of It! Huh? A Quick Guide to Overcoming Panic and Anxiety. And his name is Judson Rothschild. Rothschild. I have a lisp when I say that.
The S is silent.
Rothschild.
Yes.
Hello.
Rothschild.
That's what I am. My maiden name is Roth, so I guess I'm a Rothschild too.
You're a Rothschild too.
You certainly are. Maybe we're related. Who knows?
Could be.
Hey, great to have you on the show, Judson.
Thank you, Michelle. Pleasure to be here.
Well, I really enjoyed your book. It was terrific.
Well, thank you.
You covered everything to do with panic disorder and stressed out and everything. I mean, from relaxation techniques, medications, to why we get panicky and all that. You know?
That's what happens when you actually go through it yourself.
Oh, man. Are you right? A lot of people don't understand what a panic attack is. And, you know, well, I think you're right on with the title. One of the worst things that friends or relatives can say is snap out of it. Well, you know, come on, get a grip, right?
It's the truth, because you're sitting there thinking, if I could snap out of this, don't you think I would?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Exactly. No,
kind of
I'm
crazy.
Really enjoying feeling like I'm going to die any moment.
Well, I mean, there's a flip side to that. You know, there's some people that actually do start sort of buy into the philosophy of being
right.
The victim. I just don't.
No, and good for you. And that's also what I like about this book, because you say, hey, guys, hello, you got control.
Well, I mean, we've all gone down the slippery slope of, you know, being the victim. And at a certain point, you just got to get over it, and you got to get up, and you got to take back control of your life.
God, is that true? So why did you write this? You know, it's a comprehensive guide.
Well, I wrote this book because I just wished when I went through this experience that I actually had something like this to read.
Yeah.
If I had, I would have saved myself a trip to the hospital. I would have saved myself a lot of money and a lot of heartache.
Yes.
And at the time, I mean, there really was no book that really told it from the perspective of somebody who had actually gone through the experience.
Right, right.
And I believe that the difference between writing a book from somebody who had gone through the experience and somebody that has just researched it is totally different.
Yeah.
So I would be sitting in front of doctors. They'd be explaining all this stuff to me. And I mean, technically it made sense.
Right.
But to me, I could not relate to any of it.
Right. Right.
I kept saying, well, have you experienced this?
Right.
Well, no, I haven't really experienced this. But this isn't, I c- kept feeling there was a disconnect.
Right, exactly.
So I didn't trust any of the information I was getting.
Well, sometimes you can't, you know, unless they know exactly, I think I'm dying, and then they go to, uh-oh, he's crazy. But you really do feel like you're dying.
You really do feel like you're dying.
Exactly.
I mean, you will not find anyone who has gone through panic and anxiety that won't look you straight in the face and say, I wouldn't wish this experience on my worst enemy.
Yeah, exactly.
And until you've walked in those shoes, you really don't know what that feels like.
No kidding. By the way, let me invite you folks, in case you just tuned in here, to LA Talk Radio. You're on the couch with Dr. Michelle, my special guest, Judson Rothschild, and he's the author of Snap Out of It! Snap Out of It? What? It's a quick guide to overcoming panic and anxiety. I like to say it both ways.
Well,
undramatic.
The quick guide is, I really believe that no self-help book should be over 120 pages.
No, good for you.
Because
that's true.
If you can't get through a book in 2 hours and be able to come away with a philosophy and some tools to make some changes, then the rest is just filler.
Yeah, I agree.
And let's face it, when you're in the middle of panic and anxiety, you don't have 5 hours. You really need to find some tools quickly.
Exactly. And you need to find that chapter that says, here, breathe right now, and you won't die. By the way, no one's ever died of a panic attack or panic symptoms.
They absolutely have not.
You know. I invite you to call here live on the air if you have any questions for Judson. 323-203-0815 is the number. 323-203-0815. If you are shy, you don't want to get your voice on the air, you can email me directly here, and I'll answer your questions. Or actually, I'll put it on Judson. Doc Michelle, DLC Michelle with two L's at AOL.com. Doc Michelle at AOL.com. And we're talking about managing panic, anxiety. Can you sort of talk about some of your own experiences that you had?
Well, it's kind of fascinating. I mean, my upbringing, when you look at my upbringing, it's kind of interesting that I never had panic and anxiety before I did.
Right.
I mean, by the time I was 21, I had survived emotional abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse. I've been robbed and kidnapped.
So Judson.
I had not, and I always looked at it, which was rather interesting. I always looked at it as if I was just nothing more than a victim of circumstance.
Well, sure.
I never took it as being a victim.
Right.
And I think that that was a great survival technique, because I realized I was a victim of circumstance. If I had taken myself out of that situation and put Michelle in that situation, those same things probably would have happened.
Absolutely.
And that was a nice intellectual approach.
Yes.
But the problem was later on, as you well know, the emotional part caught up with me.
Yes, absolutely.
And I happened to be in Japan at the time modeling, and somebody pushed on me during one of the shoots, and I felt something in my chest. And I felt around, and I discovered a lump. And I immediately made a plane reservation back to Los Angeles, went to one of the specialists. They took the lump out, and when I woke up from the anesthesia, the doctor was looking at me, you know, saying, you know, it looked really good. It looked like a benign tumor. They've taken it out. And I'm looking at him, and all I could think of was that I was dying.
Oh, yes.
And he looked at me kind of confused, and he said, what's going on with you? I said, I feel like I'm jumping out of my skin. I've never felt like this before.
Yeah.
He said, oh, you're having a bad reaction to the medication. Mm-hmm. 2 days later, you're having a bad reaction to the medication. 2 weeks later, you're having a bad reaction to the medication. 6 months later, I walked into a hospital and said, you stop this or I will.
Yeah, yeah.
And
did you think you were having a heart attack, Judson?
I was examined by every doctor in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm telling you, for brain tumors, for heart issues, for every issue known to mankind, every single one of them kept telling me, you're like an Olympic athlete.
Yeah.
You're in great shape. I said, I'm an Olympic athlete, but I have no event. I mean, what are you talking about?
Right.
You know,
it
just that just perpetuated the fact that you felt you were going crazy.
Right. Absolutely.
Because you couldn't understand why your brain was saying one thing, but your body was supposedly healthy, but it was acting out, you know, trembling, tense, you know, all those.
Yeah. Can
feelings.
You explain some of the symptoms so people who are listening, if they don't know what a panic attack is?
Well, what happens is you have a tightness in your chest. You feel like you can't breathe or you're hyperventilating.
Right.
Your muscles are getting really tight. Your vision gets blurry. You have this overwhelming sense of gloom and doom, actually.
Yes.
You feel, you know, you just feel like you're jumping out of your skin.
Right.
And
heart pounding
is pretty standard for the fight or flight response. Let's face it.
Exactly.
I mean, if you actually understand
what that is.
But you don't understand it at the time. You just realize you're going crazy.
Right. The old brain that we use to survive
to, you know, from the whatever, dinosaurs or tigers or whoever.
When we were it's interesting because the first thing I tell people when I work with them is I say, stupid people don't have panic and anxiety. They're too damn stupid to think about it.
Oh, I like that.
You have to have a high IQ. And I said, and right. on top of that, you're artistic. And a lot of them will go, oh, I'm not artistic. I said, really? So you've created all these wonderful scenarios that have never happened. That's pretty damn artistic as far as I'm concerned.
That's right. And we're going to talk about a little bit later in your chapter, too, which you call stinking thinking.
Yeah.
People are creating these fears, and rightly so. So what I like, too, is that you say that we should all consider ourselves, and most of the people who are going to read this book, too, have relatives or are themselves, you know, victims. And I don't mean to say victims, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do.
Have suffered from panic attacks or stressors. You don't have to have full-blown panic attacks either to read this book, folks. If you're stressed and you're sweating and you're dizzy and you have to catch your breath sometimes, this is a great guide.
This is actually a book that you should be, anyone should read it and teach their kids.
Yeah.
If you start at a beginning age of teaching people that these feelings and these thoughts are okay to have.
That's right.
Then you will diffuse the panic and anxiety button at the beginning.
Right.
You'll never go any further.
Exactly.
Which is one of the reasons why I talk about turning everybody into the researcher.
Yes,
that's right. Or researcher, well, whether you say tomato or tomato.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, to me, that is the number one most important reason I wrote this book.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't understand the fight or flight response, you're not taking your situation seriously.
Mm-hmm.
You're relying on a doctor to help you, and you haven't done your homework.
Right.
If I turn you into the researcher and you understand physiologically what's happening to the body, the second it starts happening, immediately you're no longer, oh my God, I'm going crazy. Oh my God, I'm going to have another panic attack. You're going, whoa, this is interesting.
Yes.
So my breathing, I'm holding my breath or I'm over breathing or I'm sweating.
Mm-hmm.
What was I doing? What was I doing 10 minutes before this? What was I telling myself 10 minutes before this?
Right.
That put me into the fight or flight response.
Right, right. Exactly.
I mean, people don't understand.
Yes.
The fight or flight response, our bodies are the best high-performance racing machine on the planet. The fight or flight response is designed for one reason only, to protect us, not to hurt us.
Yeah.
If you're feeling panic and anxiety, that's actually a great thing. Your body's trying to protect you.
That's right. It's how we survive, too.
Well, and I use a great analogy, mm-hmm. Michelle. Since I do build houses and I like construction.
Yeah.
If we're going by a construction site, mm-hmm. and there is a crane, mm-hmm. and the crane starts to fall over, and everybody out in the job site says, get out of the way, move, move. Well,
right.
if panic and anxiety and the fight or flight response did not exist, we would stand there and we'd be crushed.
Right.
But that's not what happens.
Right.
Panic and anxiety jumps in. Mm-hmm. All of our muscles go. Our breathing increases. The blood flow goes right to our main muscles so we can run.
Right.
And we take off like a bat out of hell.
Right, right. That's right.
Well, everybody can understand that. Mm-hmm. So everybody goes, oh, yeah, I can understand the crane falling. I can understand that panic and anxiety. But what they don't understand is the insidious way they're thinking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because all day long, what everybody, and listen, we've all done it. I'm too old. I'm too fat. I'm too thin. I don't have enough money. I'm not going to be able to pay the bills.
Exactly.
I'm not going to be able to keep up with the kids. Every time you say something like that,
mm-hmm.
you're telling your body and your mind the crane is falling.
That's right.
And your body, which is the best performance racing machine and going to protect you,
mm-hmm.
jumps to attention.
That's right.
It starts ramping up. Your blood starts flowing. Your heartbeat starts going. Your eyes, pupils start dilating. All the symptoms that everybody's complaining about are designed to do nothing but protect you.
Yes, it's true.
So if people...
That's great knowledge, too, for people to have.
Well, the second you become the researcher suddenly,
mm-hmm,
you're
right.
now a scientist. You're like going, wow, I'm no longer a victim of what all this is. I'm understanding really physiologically what's happening to my body.
You're more of an observer, which
Correct.
Is great.
And you're in
exactly.
it.
Yes, exactly. And you're talking about also the thoughts, you know, the fearful thoughts that we all have. What ifs?
Everybody,
what ifs.
Everybody has them.
And, you know, I always emphasize that, you know, neurons that fire together wire together. And the research is that the more we think thoughts, the more we're increasing neural patterns to continue to reinforce those thoughts.
Absolutely.
And on and on and on.
You are what you think.
Exactly. Totally.
You are the thoughts that are going through your head.
And we are strengthening them. Hence, we need to have some kind of positive affirmations that we can really believe in.
Right.
Make that transition to not
well,
just, you know,
I have a saying when you're in the height of panic and anxiety, it's
yes.
really funny. I go,
yep.
When you're home alone, you are in bad company.
That's right.
Because your brain is just going, I mean, creating the most ridiculous scenarios,
right,
you know?
Right, right.
It's pretty funny.
It is funny. And also when you're home and maybe not alone, or you have folks around you who don't get it, and that's why you wrote Snap Out of It.
Right.
I mean, you've had folks say to you, Snap Out of It!
We all have.
They're uncomfortable.
They don't know
what's going on.
They don't, you know, and they'll say, oh, you think you had a bad day, you know, and you're like, what the hell? I am about to die. Do you not understand this? And that brings me to a big point, because most people, and I think the number one fear when you're having panic and anxiety is you feel that you are all alone in this world.
Yes, you do.
And it's really another reason I wrote this book. Mm-hmm. You are not alone. There's 200 million people right now in this world with panic and anxiety.
Yes.
200 million.
Yes. Yes.
So
that's
the odds are pretty good there's somebody in your circle of friends
right.
that isn't telling you they have panic and anxiety, or well, we all know them. They're
right.
the ones that have four drinks, you know, during the party or
right.
getting
exactly.
El Blotto.
Right, right.
Because let's face it, alcohol is the number one choice, you know, for self-medicating.
That's right. And
so we have these people
exactly.
in our lives all around us that are suffering with it. They're just not
sure.
talking about it.
Right. And you nailed it. You know, we sometimes self-medicate the GABA in the brain to manage it. You know all about that. And also pot, you know, that. But then again, what you have, as you know, is rebound anxiety when those chemicals settle down the next day or when they're kind of out of your brain and you're, you know, then you have that boom, rebound anxiety.
And alcohol is the number, I mean, you know, I think there's a list of a lot of things that you should not be doing, you
yes.
know, when you have panic and anxiety,
exactly.
you know, and the number one, you know, number one issue is you should not be drinking.
Yeah.
You certainly should not be smoking anything, because nicotine is also another issue.
Sure.
You should not be doing any sort of, you know, illegal,
exactly.
you know, drugs.
Right. Yeah.
You don't want to do, you shouldn't even have caffeine.
Right.
Because the problem is all of those things are going to produce the same feeling that mimic the physiological responses of panic and
mm-hmm.
anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And people are not going to be able to understand that.
Wow, it's so true.
How really many people is. Have you probably seen in your practice that have talked about, oh my God, I got stoned and I thought I was going to die and I had to go to the hospital and it's just been a, you know, continuing problem with it.
Yeah, absolutely. You're my hero, by the way. You have never had a drink of
alcohol.
I
have never had a drink.
What?
I've
so
never had a drink.
Of you, Judson.
I've never had a drink, a drug, a smoke. Well, I mean, a commercial or something that I was doing, I had to take a taste or a smoke or something. But I've never recreationally done any of those things.
God, I am so proud.
But
of
I do
you.
Like
that's
my dark
amazing.
Chocolate, Michelle.
Oh, that's a drug, baby. I'm telling
and
you.
And make
that
sure and
is...
give it to me with almonds, walnuts, something.
Oh yeah. Well, there's good things in chocolate.
Yeah, there's
stimulates
yes,
the
they make
love
you,
hormone.
Well, we all love that. Who can have too much love, right?
That's right, honey. By the way, in case you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle. My special guest today is Judson Rothschild. He's the author of the book Snap Out of It. See, I did it right this time.
Yes, you
it's
did.
It's a quick guide to overcoming panic and anxiety. It's a great guide because he is a researcher, indeed, and he took the time to explain to you why you're feeling these feelings, how you can help yourself, how you can change your thoughts and your body, how you do have power over panic symptoms, and you don't have to go into full-blown disabled panic symptoms, even if you're just stressed out, which is for all of us.
You can't avoid being stressed.
Exactly. It's really true. I love to research people's pasts, and I'm not psychoanalytic. I'm psychodynamic, but also all the other, you know, orientations as well. But, you know, we talk about in DSM-5, we talk about the inheritability of panic disorder. And indeed, if we look back and see one of our parents or grandma or grandpa, they don't really have a lot of the DSM with grandma or grandpa because they didn't have it readily available. But,
well,
they say things like, well, grandpa used to just kind of sit down and he said, I'm done, you know, but so, aha, I inherited those genes.
Well, I definitely, there's no doubt. I mean, when I look back at my, one of the reasons I don't drink is because I looked back and I saw a lot of alcohol abuse.
Yes.
And it didn't take a genius to be able to look back and start realizing, you know, that's genetics.
Yes.
When it comes to panic and anxiety, I think there's two issues you have to look at. I mean, you have to ultimately look in my genetics, you see that they all drank and self-medicated, you know, or did drugs to self-medicate their own anxiety. They didn't want to come out and talk about it. I also have to say that I think as an adult, it's important to be able to, when you talk about your parents, to also look back at what the social, you know, times were in those days of what they were allowed to do.
Right.
You know, they didn't tell their friends things. You didn't even, you know, I have a mentally retarded brother.
Yeah.
You didn't even tell your friends that you had a mentally, I guess they say mentally challenged
yes.
now.
Uh-huh.
Mentally challenged
yeah. No.
child.
Yeah, yeah.
You didn't tell your friends this.
Sure.
So, you know, it's important to look back and also look at your parents
sure.
and look at what they, you know, what the societal expectations were for them.
Right.
You know, because we're so quick to blame them. You couldn't
right.
do this. You didn't go to therapy. You didn't do that. You didn't do all this
right,
and you
right.
know that's when you kind of say get over it you
right,
know at a certain
exactly.
point I always tell my friends you get 2 years in therapy to blame your parents
yeah
and if you are
right.
not in therapy talking about what you're going to do on a daily basis to
right.
make your life
that's
better
right. that's
then
right.
you're wasting everybody's time
right, right.
But I think in with panic and anxiety the genetic predisposition is there
it really is
and if it's not just the genetic it's the social way your parents have dealt with their own panic and anxiety that gets transferred to their kids as well.
Wow, that's
because you
true.
You kind of sit around and you watch how they deal with the money.
Yes.
You see how they anguish over money. You see
yes.
how they anguish over certain things, and
right.
we take that on.
Right, absolutely.
You know, we don't realize we do. We're just no. kids, and we're just going, oh, no, a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
There's so much anxiety about money.
Right.
When I'm sure you have it. I talk to a lot of people about it. They're sitting there, and it's always about money, and I look at them, and I say, so, have you ever seen the Brinks truck follow the hearse?
Thank you. That's right.
And they look, and I go, listen, the world would be a lot better off if nobody had had money issues. But
well,
the fact is,
yeah.
if we have enough to eat and pay our bills, you know, we can't take any of these things with us.
That's right.
Right now, what you have is your mental health, and you really have to jump on board of that and just try to be as happy and as healthy as you can.
That's great advice because a lot of people, you know, it is, especially today, you know, with the media and reality shows you and I were talking about before
right.
we went on here. The whole thing is, oh, I've got to be wealthy. I've got to have money. I've got to do this. No, you know what? The mentality is not, and that's also part of worry. You know, oh, I've got to, try to function, pay your bills, be responsible. But take care of yourself.
Well, and
that's the important thing.
And I think you're so right because there's a difference between worry and concern.
Yeah.
Concern are things you actually can go about
right.
and do something. Worry are things you're going to ruminate
exactly.
over and never get anything accomplished.
Yes, you never
you know,
will.
And there's a distinction there, and people need to make that distinction. You know, if you're worrying about losing your job,
right.
you already have a job.
That's right.
What are you worrying about losing your job for?
You're kind of manifesting. You're going to get fired.
Absolutely.
Huh?
Are you showing up on time at
yeah.
your job? Are
yeah.
you doing, you know, are you, you know, going out of your way to do everything you need to
right.
at your work? If that's the case, then the odds are pretty good that you're going to keep your job. And if
exactly.
not, you have no control over that anyway.
That's right. That's
so
true.
It's kind of that stinking thinking thing we talk
yeah,
about.
Yeah, exactly. And also, we talked about the genetics, the stinking thinking, the manicatives and all that. But also...
Stinky.
Can I quote something from
you may.
Your book here? I love this stuff. Panic and anxiety is what happens to the good kids. Okay? We always did what we were told. We didn't act out, and we stuffed our feelings. Okay? This is such a biggie, especially with controlling parents or parents who have issues and things like that. You know? I mean, it's just amazing. It really is. Hey, Judson, we have a caller on the line. Should we take it?
Sure.
Hi, you're on the air. This is Dr. Michelle, my special guest today, Judson Rothschild. Who's this?
This is Jack.
Hey, Jack, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, doing great. I was listening to the show, and what he is talking about with I believe his name is Jonathan, is talking about really makes a lot of sense about the fight and flight syndrome.
Yes, it is. It really is. His name's Judson, by the way, but that's okay.
Oh, Judson, I'm sorry.
That's
I'm
okay.
Sorry.
Judson.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's okay, Jonathan.
That's okay, Jeff. No,
I'm kidding. So
just kidding you. No, it's true about the fight or flight. Have you had panic symptoms before, Jack?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
Yes, I have.
Do you still suffer
from
them?
I know exactly what he's talking about in regards to that feeling of anxiousness and breathing and sweating and mm-hmm. and the overall view of when you say to yourself, you know, oh, I don't have enough money or I have this problem or whatever, and it blended with it made a lot of sense. It just made a lot of sense.
Well, the interesting thing is, Jonathan, the fight or flight response, as I really try to remind people, is it's designed to make you. It's designed to protect you. You know, if you were out in the wild and something came to attack you, which is tantamount to what's happening in panic and anxiety, your heart increases for a reason, because you're getting prepared to run. Your muscles are tensing so you can run. The blood flow is going to all the big muscles in your body so you can run, which means your fingers and your toes are going to get really cold, which a lot of people complain about. They go, I feel like I'm tingling. I'm sure maybe you even had some of that. Your pupils start to dilate because you become very, very, your eyes are looking around at your surroundings and they're becoming very pinpointed because you're looking around to see where the danger is coming from. You start to sweat. Because when people are sweating, it's very hard to grab them.
Yeah, it's really, you know, that's right.
It's very hard to grab them. So when you start reminding people, this is why panic and anxiety exists. This is why the fight or flight exists, is to protect you. Mm-hmm. It reinforces to people that, you know, this is actually something healthy. Where the disconnect is happening is exactly what you said. You know, I don't have enough money. I'm not going to be able to pay my bills, which, by the way, those are reality-based, mm-hmm. you know, many of the times. But, you know, people have to figure out different ways of creating relaxation. Remember, relaxation is the key.
Mm-hmm. So true. Jack, you said that you have had panic symptoms before. How do you manage those symptoms? How have you done that?
I just sit down and I try to clear my mind and mm-hmm. relax.
Okay.
Sometimes it doesn't work, but I do the best I can.
Well, and what tools do you use to relax?
Just breathing.
Breathing is
just clearing my mind.
We're going to talk a little bit about breathing, so that's a good thing. It is a physical.
Great.
You put your finger on it, Jonathan. It's a physical impossibility to have panic and anxiety if you were relaxed. Absolutely physical impossibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really true.
So that is the number one key people have to figure out how to create relaxation in their body.
Does the breathing... Go ahead, Jack. I'm
sorry. You're going to talk more about that now, right?
Yeah, we're going to talk about the different ways of doing that. Yeah.
Great.
And also, you might want to check out this book as well. Pick it up because it's called Snap Out of It. It's a quick guide to overcoming panic and anxiety. And, you know, there are so many different things that you can do, Jack, to help you get through some of these panic symptoms. There's so many suggestions. So if you're looking at all these different angles of thought, regulation of your autonomic nervous systems, habits that you choose to do or not do, you know, how you can cut out drinking or caffeine, things like that. So I would, I sound like your PR person, but I mean, I did not pay her for this.
I don't want to become a saint. I don't want to become a saint. You know,
okay.
I love my coffee and I love my beer and
well, that's cool.
I just want to learn how to deal with this stuff.
Well, this is the deal. You don't have to be a saint. Just because I chose not to do these things, you know, doesn't mean you have to choose it. However, if you're using
you're missing out on a lot of fun.
No, I am. If you talk to my friends, I'm a very fun person to be around. But Jonathan, the real deal here is if you're using any of those things to relax, that's where you're running into a problem. Because a lot of people use alcohol and beer or, you know, hard liquor to relax. And what's happening, and we'll talk about it a little later, is you're never getting into your really deep sleep. With that, you're creating a whole nother set of problems.
That's right.
Having a drink one drink a night isn't going to kill anybody. It's when people are using that as a tool in order to relax. So you're going to have to figure out different ways, you know, to relax and still, you know, enjoy your life. I'm not asking you not to do that, but you have to know the clear distinction of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't just be in, you
where
just
can
can't
pick
be
up the book.
You
where can you pick up the book?
You can pick it up on Amazon.com. You can order it on Amazon.com, or you can go to my website, which is snapoutofit.tv, and order it there.
And we'll be also, you know, giving that information at the end of the show as well. And as you may know, Jack, if you're a regular listener, that we have, of course, downloads and replays for all of my shows right here on LA Talk Radio, which will be available tomorrow. And also they're all on iTunes and TalkTube. So thank you so much for calling, Jack. I sure hope we helped
Jonathan.
You a little bit.
Jonathan.
Oh, that's right. We're messing with
you're
him.
You're making
this. Listen
oh, come on. Come on. Okay. Well, have a great day, and I love the show, and I am a listener.
Oh, thanks for calling in. We appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You are a fun guy, aren't you?
I am a Justin. Fun guy.
If you just tuned in to LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle, and my special guest today is Judson Rothschild. We're talking about managing panic symptoms, anxiety symptoms, stress in general. This book is not just for those of you who have suffered panic and anxiety. It's for folks who are stressed out, which is for everyone in the world. So there you go.
So you were talking about how one of I think my biggest epiphanies was panic and anxiety. Okay, I've already said, you know, I was practically perfect as far as a kid could be. I didn't drink, I didn't smoke, I didn't do any of that stuff. And yet here I am having panic and anxiety. I mean, how does that happen?
Mm-hmm. I know how that happens.
And I'm fascinated. I bet you do know how that happens.
I knew, honey. Because, I won't get into my personal issues.
Yeah, but because what happens is we end up stuffing our feelings.
That's exactly
you know,
right.
If you're the good child, and that was the thing that I remembered.
Exactly.
Looking at my therapist, going, "Don't I, you know, freaking get extra credit?
Right.
I mean, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do drugs. I mean, come on.
Right.
I mean, I'm now having panic and anxiety at the age of 32. You got to be kidding me.
Well, it happens.
And part That's of right. it was because I had intellectualized what had happened to me, but I had not really allowed myself to feel those things.
Yes, exactly.
And when that manhole cover got blown off with whatever that surgery was or anesthesia, you know, that created sort of a chemical imbalance.
Right.
Suddenly, I was not prepared of how to deal with all these feelings that were sitting in front of me.
Yes, exactly.
Because over the years, you stuff things.
Yes, we
you
do.
Know, and every, you know, and right now, I think one of the best things that we're seeing when we're discussing in public is bullying.
Oh, yes.
All of us kids who went to school, and, you know, I was a really cute kid. The girls loved me. The guys hated me.
Okay.
And I was very quiet and very shy, which, of course, you can certainly see I still am,
right? Yeah, you sure are.
Yeah, right. And But, you know, as a child, you take that in.
Yeah.
And I was a good kid. I didn't have to act to be a good kid.
Right.
I just was a good kid. I did the right thing. However, there were many times I would have liked to talk back. There are many times I would have liked to have fought back.
Sure, of course.
And what reared its ugly head later on were all those feelings, and I didn't know what to do with them.
That's right. And when we're controlled and feel that, I mean, I don't know if you have siblings. Did you have siblings or not?
I did have siblings. I've lost a sister to drugs and alcohol.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, sweetheart, you know, and sometimes our siblings act differently than us. They're the spokespeople who yell and fight. And, you know, we learn, and I say we because I share this with you, we learn to be the good kids. And if we walk on eggshells and say the appropriate things, it really helps us socially for our lives out there, the world.
Absolutely.
But there's some good things to that.
Well, many of us grew up, you know, with very strict parents.
That's right.
You know, so you did what you were told, and you were good because there were the fear of God was
put in
you
That's
if you
right.
did not.
That's right.
And, you know, not that you wouldn't have been good anyway, but you grew up with this sense of fear.
Absolutely.
And that fear is what comes and gets you, you know, later on.
Yes, it really does. And for all of those of you out there who suffer from panic or stress and you can't control some of your autonomic systems, your heart rate, your breathing, you know, your shortness of breath, you're sweaty, you're uncomfortable, you've got to kind of think about going to a therapist who can specialize in anxiety issues, because sometimes it's great to be able to understand emotionally why you've shoved all these feelings down and why your body's going, ha-ha, you're not getting away with it. You've got to really face and feel and understand. And another point you make is just pat yourself on the back and try to love, or if you can't do that, like yourself and excuse yourself and forgive yourself. And really take good care
Well, it's really important. It's part of also, you know, the philosophy behind stinking thinking.
Yes, exactly.
Because what happens is we're constantly second-guessing everything our entire life. And and I do a really simple exercise, and I gladly give this to you.
I'm ready. I'm ready.
You know, a lot of people tend to, you know, I don't want to put the artist way down and all those kind of books down. But in panic and anxiety, they start to go so deep. They forget to have fun. They forget to find out what they enjoy in life.
Right.
And stinking thinking is this philosophy. We don't realize, or we kind of touched on a little bit about the crane falling down. We're not paying attention to the negative thoughts we're having. So what I do is I give people a really simple exercise. I give them a yellow pad of paper, and I say, take this pad of paper with you all day long. Write down any negative thought that crosses your mind. Don't give it any attention. It's sort of like meditation. Just write it down and just move on.
Let it go.
And let it go.
Right.
Then
focus on something else.
Before dinner, you don't want this after dinner. You, before dinner, sit down and look at that pad of paper. You will discover negativity runs your life. This goes for people that are some of the most positive people in the world.
Right.
Everybody is shocked. They look down at this list and they go, I had no idea. Every thought that crosses your mind is creating some sort, you know, of response in your mind and your body.
Sure,
and
exactly.
I'm sure I don't have to tell Michelle this because, you know, she does. She hears this all day long.
That's right, no.
But
right.
It is probably the number one you can, I mean, it's the easiest exercise you can do. You will look at that negativity, and then, of course, the next response people say is, okay, now what do I do?
Right.
Well, this gets to be the fun part, because every time you have a negative thought, you have to counter it with a positive thought.
That's right.
Well, people look at me and go, you're kidding. I said, no, every time a negative thought crosses your mind, you have to counter it with a positive thought.
So let's do an example here.
Okay.
So I say, I'm writing down a couple of things here.
Okay.
All right. And I'm having fears, or I have these negative
You're going
thoughts.
Crazy.
I'm going crazy. I'm having negative thoughts. All right. What if my boss is angry with me? Because I didn't finish this project. Or I know my boss is going to be pissed, and I don't know if I want to deal with this, because I didn't finish this project all the way. All right.
That's a negative thought.
That's a negative thought.
Okay. No, I'm going to counter that with, no, I am actually working on the project right now, and the boss is going to love this project when I'm finished with it.
Okay. All
right. I know I might have experienced this thought before.
Yes.
However, these thoughts have come and gone a lot of times, and I've gotten past them very quickly.
It's part of
acknowledging that this is a process.
You know, I
have this thought process, and that's okay. I've had this thought process before.
Right.
But you know what? You know, especially when people, I get it all the time, you know, I feel like I'm going crazy. Really? How many times have you run down the street screaming gibberish that Martians have eaten your brain?
That's right.
Probably
You're not
none,
going crazy.
Right?
Right.
So, but that's okay. So when you say, you know, I'm going crazy, you go, no, I'm not going crazy. I am healthy.
Right.
And I know I've had these thoughts before.
Yes.
I have survived these thoughts many times. I'm just going to acknowledge they're there, and I'm moving on.
All right.
But after you have to counter these negative thoughts, after about 3 days, you will be afraid to think of a negative thought. You will be so exhausted.
That's true. you're working it.
Because it changes your whole philosophy.
Yes.
You know, because you're like, oh my God, I had no idea how many times.
Exactly.
And as you said, the job, you know, you're already creating a scenario that doesn't even exist.
That's the biggie, you know, with cognitive thinking and just changing those thoughts and, again, changing those neural patterns. And the more you do it, counter it.
The better.
Write it down and then, write that. One of the most common things I hear is, I've had some relationships in the past, or I was with somebody for 3 years and it was great, but then it blew up and I'm 43 now and I'll never find anybody. They're all jerks out there, especially here in Los Angeles. They're all jerks. I'll never find anybody. I'll never have a good relationship. So what do you say to that, counter that?
Well, I say you're going to get exactly what you deserve. Nothing.
That's right.
Because you're putting only negative thoughts into that.
That's right.
And one of my philosophies is the next book I'm kind of working on, which I think we talked about before.
Yes, we did.
Which is when it comes to relationships, when you're getting out of a relationship, you know, you have to honor that relationship with as much integrity and love getting out of it as you did into it. I don't care what the other person did. I don't want to know what their problems were. This is about you. This is about how you live in your life.
Yes.
How you you're taking control of your life, which is kind of a catch-22 because, as we all know, control is an illusion.
Yes, that's true. It really
we
is.
We don't have control over anything.
Except our thoughts and our actions.
Correct. Is that right, Michelle?
It. It's so true. It's so true, Judson.
We will manipulate. We will try. We will force our... We will
That's
do
right.
everything we can to grab control
That's
over
right.
things. But we really don't have those.
Yeah.
That control.
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
really, what do you have control over?
Nothing.
I mean,
thoughts
we don't
and actions.
Even, well, some of the thoughts we don't have control over, they zoom in. But how we deal with that thought is
That's
where
right.
we have control.
That's really true. Well said, my dear. So you have the cognitive thinking changes, and you have the breathing. Maybe we can give folks a quick little lesson on how to breathe properly.
Well, you know, breathing, you know, there it's funny. Any great specialist, and I know Michelle probably knows this breathing technique very well. Anybody who specializes in panic and anxiety teaches the 4-7-8 breath mm-hmm. breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what it is you can sit, some people lie down. I mean, lie or lay down.
Whichever you like.
I never get that one. Am I lying down or am I laying
but
down?
But don't lie when
yeah.
you say that.
Don't lie when you're saying
okay.
that. But what you're supposed to do, or the best place to do it is relax. Sitting in a chair is my mm-hmm. best way to mm-hmm. do it. And you can do this. Please don't do it in the car while you're driving, okay?
Or pull off.
Oh, yeah, pull off to the side of the road and do that for everybody's sake. What you want to do is rest your hands in your lap, mm-hmm. and you're inhaling through your nose and you're exhaling through your mouth.
Yes.
And you will inhale for a count of four. And then what you will do with that breath is you will hold the breath for a count of seven.
Mm-hmm.
And then you will exhale for the count of eight. The great reason why this works is it puts the body back into the parasympathetic state.
Yes.
And what that does is it creates low blood, you know, lowers your blood pressure, it lowers your breathing, you have a sense of feeling calm,
mm-hmm.
and you do this for about 10 times.
Yes.
At first it's going to feel a little awkward, but I promise you, this technique will really work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that if somebody's having panic and anxiety, they should be implementing at least 3 times a day.
Yeah.
Even if you don't have panic and anxiety, you should be implementing it at least once a day. You know, when you're feeling stress or,
mm-hmm.
I mean, how hard is it? Come on, you're sitting
now.
In the chair or sitting in the car or something.
That's
I
right.
mean, come on, you can do this.
Exactly.
And it is just another way of treating your body well.
Right. It sure is.
It's a temple. You need to honor it.
You do. And the temple can be honored by you taking control. And there are other suggestions that you give as well. I mean, of course, exercise is a no-brainer.
Exercise is a no-brainer, you know? And I want to tell you why it's such a no-brainer. Mm. Anyone who specializes in panic and anxiety really will not take on people who do not exercise
right.
at least 3 times a week.
That's right.
And if you really should be exercising 5 times a week.
Yeah.
It gets the natural endorphins just pumping away.
Right.
It tires you out because it helps you sleep later on, mm-hmm. which is a big problem that a lot of people with panic and anxiety
yeah.
have,
exactly.
is that obsessive thinking all the time. Meditation is another great tool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depending on what state you are in your panic and anxiety, meditation is good for you or not good for you,
mm-hmm.
because sometimes you'll start obsessing that you're not getting that right. It's not about getting anything right.
Right.
It's just about trying something and you've got to find the tool that's going to help you relax.
So true, Judson. And meditation is not, you know, a lot of people make it very complicated. I have,
No.
You know,
well,
it's
different. There's different versions.
Now.
It's
yeah,
like yoga.
Right. Yeah.
Yoga is a great way to stretch and to open the body up,
yeah.
you know, because you're feeling tight and you're feeling tense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the big number one thing is exercise, guys. It's
yeah.
free. You can walk down the street.
That's so
Walking
true.
Will do exactly what you need if you feel like you can't go, you know, to a gym. You don't have the
it's
money
true.
To go to the gym.
It's true.
Walking's free.
Yeah, it's so true.
And food. Food is another thing. Now, we just talked a little bit mm-hmm. about, you know, alcohol and
right.
everything. Listen, I'm not asking everybody to be a saint.
Right.
You don't have to be me. I chose...
Wait a minute. You're not a saint.
I am so not a saint.
About you and...
You have no idea.
Wait, I'm going to bust you right now on live radio. I know about you and dark chocolate.
Oh, yeah.
And almonds.
Yep.
So,
dark chocolate and almonds. Dark chocolate and any nut. It doesn't matter what it is. Or coconut.
I'm with you.
Or coconut.
I am so with you on that. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
But I'm not asking anybody to be a saint. But the fact is, if you were, as I stated before, if you're
yeah.
using any of these, you know, recreational issues to
right.
relax you, it's not a good thing.
No.
But exercise is the number one key for you to employ.
Mm-hmm.
Breathing. Mm-hmm. Food. What people don't understand is you can actually create a sense of well-being with the food you eat. How? is that possible? Well, there's a lot of research right now going on serotonin and dopamine. Mm-hmm. And it's really new thinking. Mm-hmm. But what it basically talks about is that carbohydrates help create the serotonin, help boost the serotonin in your body, yes. whereas protein helps stimulate the dopamine.
Right.
Now,
right.
if anybody understands the chemicals that are going on in our brain, mm-hmm. and I mm-hmm. certainly know that Michelle does, these are the ones mm-hmm. that are going to be addressed later on if you ever get to medication.
Right.
These are the things that really pump your system up yep. and affect your serotonin levels.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of overweight people have discovered a secret. Mm-hmm. You know, it's called comfort food for a reason.
Yes, it is.
What they haven't dealt with is the fact right. that they're eating through a panic and anxiety, but they've discovered something that will make them feel better.
Right.
So
right.
they're on to something.
Right.
Now, if we
right,
could just
exactly.
get them to exercise at the same time, they'll have the best of both worlds.
Right.
But when and if, I cannot tell you how many people I've worked with, and I hate to say it, mostly a lot of them women, but now it's happening with men. Mm-hmm. They go on these diets, and mm-hmm. the next thing you know, they have panic and anxiety. Why? They've cut out fat. First
That's
of all,
right.
fat runs your nervous system.
Yes.
I don't
it's
know
important.
Why this is not, you know, this is becoming the researcher again.
That's
understanding
right.
what runs the body.
Exactly.
Fat, carbohydrates. They cut out all carbohydrates.
Right.
Well, forget it. There goes your serotonin. We call serotonin our Zen neurotransmitter.
That's true.
There goes your calming one. You've
yeah.
just cut out that. So what's left? Dopamine, which is what we call our risk taker, right?
Right.
So you're
exactly.
out there running rabid, you right. know, eating all these foods that
right.
really aren't helping you.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear a lot of people, especially on diet, say, you know mm-hmm. what? I'm not going to eat dessert. Well, the best time to eat dessert is dinner time.
That's
because
right.
it's going to take you up and you're going to crash
mm-hmm.
down to
that's
a low.
That's exactly right.
And that's a very good time. But you yeah. have to read, mm-hmm. you have to understand mm-hmm. what's actually happening to the body.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You really do.
And
your book, by the way, you do explain that, which is great.
Well, you know, it's really funny because when I do these seminars, you know, usually who's sitting in the front row are these people with their arms crossed, and
yeah.
I'm always like, oh my God.
Are they defensive?
Know? What's happening here?
Are they
and
angry?
I later discovered these
right.
are the doctors.
Oh, okay.
And they've
yeah.
been talked into going there by their one of them had been talked into going there by his wife because their children had panic and anxiety.
Aww.
He was like, "What's this guy who's not a doctor going to teach me?"
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, "I had no." He said, "We're not trained to explain this way."
Yeah.
You know, we look at it in such a different medical view.
Exactly.
But the way you attack this, he said. Illustrates that you've really gone through it
yes.
and you've learned through the process.
That's lovely.
And
it's true.
I think that's we're all here to teach, to learn, mm-hmm. and to love.
We sure are.
Aren't
I
we?
Agree.
And if we aren't
we
doing
are.
Those three things, we are in trouble.
Well, right. But we have to sort of figure out what's going on within us before we can get to that place.
Well,
so,
and I think the neurotransmitter, I think we mm-hmm. should kind of talk about that a little
sure,
bit.
Sure, sure.
I like to try to use this as an analogy also. I always like to try to make it so it's easy for all of us to understand.
Mm-hmm.
The neurotransmitter, you have to look at, and let's use a chandelier because we can all understand that. If you look at a chandelier, you think of that as the brain.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the wire that runs down to each of the arms and into each of the arms that hits the light bulbs,
right.
that is the neurotransmitter, that wire.
Yes.
Then off onto its arm, we have the neuron.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
And in the bulb on the arm... is the filament.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in order to fire all of this,
mm-hmm.
what do we have to have?
Yeah.
We have to have our power, which is our neurotransmitter.
That's right. That's
and
exactly
what's
right.
happening during stress is our body creates a certain amount of serotonin and dopamine and all these things in
yeah,
these neurotransmitters to make us feel
right,
better.
Right.
And it's doing that. But under stress, more of these chemicals are being depleted
That's
than
right.
that are being created.
That's right.
So... it was very interesting when I started writing my book and when I started getting to the point where I was sending it to publishers, their main concern was I did not have my medication chapter in the front,
mm-hmm.
which, as I'm sure you and I would
oh,
both
sure.
agree, I would want in the back.
Course. Right, exactly.
To me, medication should be the last result.
Exactly.
Or the,
I agree.
You know, the last choice.
Yes.
You want to try all these things, mm-hmm. and whether, mm-hmm. you know, the people that are on medication would still be on medication,
right.
I'm not here to judge that because I can honestly tell you, I was a day away from killing myself, and if I hadn't gone on medication,
well, right.
you know, I wouldn't be sitting
there.
There
is validity to SSRIs or SNRIs and stuff like that. So, you know, I do know that you're right on. And the way you explain it in your book is thorough, too. And You're not a pill pusher. You're not saying you gotta take these meds.
But you should not be torturing yourself.
No, exactly. I don't take medication. Oh, really? Okay. Maybe you need a little more serotonin, dopamine, and norepinephrine flowing through those brain cells.
Well, and you know, there's a whole idea with a lot of people that have a whole problem with medications and everything. Yeah. And I think if you read the book, you'll understand a little more. And you, the most important thing I think we're talking about is you really have to be loving to yourself.
Boy, is that true. And that's, folks, you've got to use some of the exercises in this book. Get some self-help about, taking care of your thoughts. And you know what I always say at the end of the show is take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for other people, and that's the way it works. How can folks get your book, Judson?
You can go to snapoutofit.tv, mm-hmm. and you can order it there, or you can go to amazon.com, mm-hmm. and you can order it, Snap Out of It, A Quick Guide to Overcoming Panic and Anxiety, or just look up my name, Judson Rothschild.
That's
R-O-T-H-S-C-H-I-L-D.
That's right. And, of course, as I mentioned, too, the show will be up in the archives tomorrow with all the information on how to get a hold of the book and find out more about Judson.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you for being such a great guest today. My pleasure to have you.
My pleasure being here.
Interesting. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
Good job.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. It's about that time. Thanks for being on the couch. You can stay. There's more great shows coming up here on LA Talk Radio. And, of course, CBS News. Keep you up to date on what's going on with everything. And as I do always say, take care of yourself first. And then you'll be great for others. That's the way it works. Next week, we're talking about having healthier relationships and stop doing the drama, guys. Come on. Grow up. Snap out of it. Have a great day. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.